Gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of the Big Footy Bombercast. I'm Bonser 34, and as always, I am joined by Grizz. How are you, mate?
I'm good. An eventful last few days for the Essendon Football Club. A lot to hustle and bustle, but no win, unfortunately.
No, look, we'll jump straight into the big topic, I think, of the week for the footy club, and that is, of course, 2 metre Peter, who unfortunately has been given a 4-week ban. The club winning argued for 3, the AFL argued for 4, and the tribunal shockingly sided with the AFL and gave 4. what are your preliminary thoughts, first on the ban and also on what actually happened between Wright and his Sydney opponent?
So I might be in the majority, the minority of Essendon fans here, in that I didn't see the incident live because I was just a bit late getting to the TV to start the game. But as soon as I saw it on replay, I thought it was 3+ weeks. I just want to be clear. I don't think it doesn't sit well with me that I think it's 3 and a bit weeks. I don't think it's necessarily fair on athletes such as Peter Wright, who is coming at the football at a rate of knots to try and mark it, and some guy comes across his vision right the last second. It doesn't sit well to me that he's basically the same as Sam Powell-Pepper, who ran past the ball in preseason and took out a Richmond guy. But the reality is, as soon as he turned his shoulder in that marking contest, he was at the sort of the will of the gods in terms of what contact he made with Cunningham. And as soon as he hit the head and Cunningham was knocked out, and I think I read earlier today that he's going to miss this week by the AFL's concussion protocol and might well miss a couple weeks. That basically puts him straight to the severe category. So I'm not surprised. It doesn't sit well with me that this is where the game's got to, but I'm not surprised that this was the outcome.
I don't think you're in the minority. I don't think any Essendon fan is arguing that he shouldn't get weeks in the current environment. I think we're all more or less on the same page. It's probably the minority that think he shouldn't have got anything, because I think we all now understand how sacrosanct the head is to the AFL. My issue with it, though, is Wright's let up the ball. He's got his eyes on the ball. He's left for the mark. As you said, Cunningham's coming late. All the talk is, well, Peter Wright has a duty of care to Cunningham. Where's Cunningham's duty of care to himself? And then this is a broader issue that I have with the AFL right now is that someone like Cunningham, and look, dangerous tackles is the other one, is at the moment, the onus of care is either all on the tackler or all on the bloke who's coming at the ball. You can throw yourself, put yourself in a dangerous position, get cleaned up, and you get a free kick for it. At some point, the AFL has to stop encouraging people to, you know, go back with the flight or to throw themselves in the tackle. We can't just keep punishing the bloke who's not getting hurt, if that makes sense. So, because I don't think Wright's the only one that's caused this. Cunningham's clearly caused this by going back with the flight of the ball into an oncoming Peter Wright. He's clearly not given any duty of care to himself. So why is Peter Wright the only one that's got the duty of care? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, if I can try and explain it this way, and to be clear, I'm not Jeff Gleeson, I'm not trying to defend the AFL's view on this, but he's a tribunal head. I'm not trying to be solicitor for the AFL here. But Harry Cunningham's duty of care to himself, which he does have, and I agree. So separate to this point, I agree completely that I think the days of running back blindly with the ball is pretty well should be done. Like, to be honest, like we can't continue to reward that action with complete impunity, because we are putting everyone around in their vicinity at a disadvantage in terms of not hurting them. And I think there's a difference between courage and stupid courage. But specifically to this scenario, Harry Cunningham's duty of care to himself does not extend to protecting himself from Peter Wright turning his shoulder into him and not contesting the footy. So I would argue that if Peter Wright attacked that contest with his arms out to mark the ball and Harry Cunningham comes in and Peter Wright makes contact with his shoulder but his arms are out at the football and he knocks Harry Cunningham out, no charges to answer. You're contesting the ball, Harry Cunningham. If you come across him and he's got his arms out and he's legitimately contesting the ball and he's bigger than you and you want to try your luck running in front of him, then you go ahead, but you're going to get knocked out. The same deal if even if he didn't have his arms out in front, which Peter Wright never does, and maybe from now on he might try to actually mark something in his hands. If Peter Wright had his arms down for the chest mark and came through and was had his eyes on the ball and collected Harry Cunningham with his shoulder, but he was going for the chest mark, I think you could make a pretty good argument there that he was contesting the ball and Harry Cunningham shouldn't be coming across with that sort of impunity. What Harry Cunningham has the right to expect is that Peter Wright isn't going to see him coming, close his eyes, leave the ground and drive his shoulder into his head.
He doesn't close his eyes and leave his ground when he sees he's already left the ground when Cunningham comes across. And the problem with that theory is if Wright goes up with two hands out like that and Cunningham hits him, that's a couple of broken ribs to Wright, and Cunningham still probably gets knocked out. And I don't think the AFL lets Wright off. I think they still go, you hit him in the head, you knock him out, you get a penalty, because that's what the AFL's saying at the moment. They're just saying, if you hit the head, you're gone.
No, they're not saying that. They're not saying that, though.
But they are. They've said all through the preseason, the head is sacrosanct. If you hit the head, you are gone. It doesn't matter if it's football action or not, because this is a football action. He's gone up for the mark at the last second. He's seen the guy. He's turned to stop his ribs getting cracked, and the AFL's still punishing him. There's nothing to suggest that the AFL is going, you can hit someone in the head if you take a mark.
It's absolutely the case. Because what happened, I can't remember who it was last week, but took a specky and drove his knee straight into the back of someone's head. Right. So in that circumstance, you're contesting the football, your knees up. Like, there is no more dangerous position for a defender than to be running back with someone's knee up. And we saw it with Stephen May, for example, eating it, hitting the head, but he got a knee to the ribs. In a marking contest, if Peter Wright runs that football with his arms out contesting the ball and he collects him with his hip or his rib to the head and knocks Cunningham out, I actually fully expect you to sit there and go, well, what's the difference between that and a specky? When you've got your knee driving into someone's head, that's head contact. And yes, the head is sacrosanct, but the head is only sacrosanct when you decide not to contest the football at the moment of impact. The one thing Peter Wright could not do in that circumstance was take his eyes off the ball and turn his shoulder.
So he should have just let his ribs get cracked by Cunningham coming the other way.
He needed to contest the ball, Bonser. He didn't try and mark it. He did not try and mark it. There was no attempt. His arms wasn't out. There wasn't an attempt to chest mark. His eyes were off the football. His legs were off the ground, and he turned his shoulder.
When do you think he looked away from the ball, though? When do you think he looked away? He had his arms out looking for his chest mark like normal, had his eyes on the ball, saw Cunningham, tucked his arms up and turned. I get that. What I'm telling you is, if I'm coming the other way and a bloke runs and cracks me in the ribs and I get cracked, your ribs are gone. So essentially you're saying the AFL's position is he should have just left himself open to get hit by Cunningham by going for the ball, and too bad if he gets injured and Cunningham just walks away. That to me is mad. And this is what Wayne Carey and all these other AFL experts who aren't Lee Matthews, and don't even get me started on how hypocritical Lee Matthews is by demanding that Peter Wright gets sent off when Lee Matthews is one of the biggest great player, one of the biggest thugs to ever play the game. That's what they're saying. Is they're saying, if I went up with my arms out like the AFL's saying, my ribs are going to get broken. And the AFL's going, oh, well, too bad. See you later. Have a few weeks off with broken ribs. But that's okay. It's not logical. It doesn't make any sense.
But you can. So I don't think it's a fait accompli. He cracks his ribs. I think we're extrapolating worst case scenario there. But I take your point. But even if he goes for the mark and he turns his hips slightly so the contact isn't straight onto his ribs or something, but what he had to legitimately contest the ball. At bare minimum. And I understand that up until the 99th percentile of that contest, he was contesting the ball. But as soon as he tucked his arm, turned his head, wasn't looking at the ball at the point of impact, and he had basically foregone any chance of marking it himself, he was liable for whatever damage he caused if he hit the head with his shoulder.
It just doesn't make sense that he has less than a second, because that's how long it took. So this is the thing. He's already in the air. He's got his arms out to take the chest mark. His eyes are on the ball. and you can look at it live. It is less than a second that he decides at the very last second to turn and protect himself and not get opened up. And I just can't understand how the AFL is sitting here going, Cunningham has absolutely no responsibility to make sure that he's not going to run through the middle of a player. But Peter Wright, because he just happens to be bigger than Cunningham and coming the other way, he's the problem. It just doesn't make sense. You can't have a contact sport where you're saying one party doesn't have any responsibility. And that's what they're saying right now, is they're saying there is no responsibility on the bloke coming the other way.
But I don't think that's what they're saying at all, Bonta.
If Cunningham had a responsibility to himself, then because that's what so the AFL tonight said Peter Wright should have pulled out. That's what their lawyer said. He had an option. His option was to not contest the ball. Are we serious? Are we honestly saying that we should be contesting? Because he contested the ball. You can argue that he didn't contest the ball as much as you want. The fact of the matter is, until less than a second before the ball got to him, his eyes were on the pill. That is what the footage shows. So he's 100% contested that ball. There is no way he's not contested that ball. And the AFL's response is he should have stood aside, let Cunningham take the mark, which is complete crap and is not how this game has been played for the last 120-odd years that it's been played.
I'm saying that there's a way you can contest for that football different than what Peter Wright did. And what Peter Wright did was the one thing you couldn't do in that circumstance.
The different the way one... is to open himself up. This is my point.
No, but if you go, this is hard because it's not a visual medium, right? But if you've got your arms out like the scoop for a chest mark, he's still cleaning up shoulder to head Cunningham. But he's doing it in a way which, no, stop for a second. He's still doing it in a way which he said, mate, I'm running straight at the ball. I'm trying to taste a chest mark. It's not my fault he dives across me and collects my shoulder. But you can't say that if you're not actually trying to chest mark it at the time the contact's made. That's the difference.
He's not going to hit his shoulder. If his arms are out, he's opening himself up front on. Because there's no way you can take it. You can't take the mark turning your body sideways. So you're either putting your arms out, which leaves you square onto the ball, which means that Cunningham would have split him straight up the middle, or he turns sideways, or as AFL wants and has admitted they want, he doesn't contest the ball, which is just ridiculous.
But the contest that happened, he wasn't trying to chest mark it either. That's the option no one's talking about. So where I say this differs is, so if you think about the Jonathan Brown mark of the year, okay, so I would suggest that if someone was to do that tomorrow and instead of Jonathan Brown mark it, the guy coming towards the ball comes and contests the football, gets his hand on it, maybe doesn't even mark it, but knocks Jono Brown into next Sunday, I would argue the AFL would let them off because Jonathan Brown's doing something absolutely stupid, but also the guy coming at the football has the right to contest it legitimately. Now, if that guy comes through and just drills Jonathan Brown in that contest and doesn't actually go for the ball, takes his eyes off the ball, it's a suspension. The critical thing here, which I think, and I've got to reiterate what I said right at the start, I'm not saying I think it's fair. I'm not saying I like where this is at. But I see where it's at, and I thought the way the rules are written, which is if you're going to forego contesting the ball legitimately, then you have a duty of care not to collect something in the head. And Harry Cunningham has the right to expect Peter Wright isn't going to take his eyes off the football and turn his shoulder at the point of contact. I strongly disagree.
I think by saying that, you're essentially saying that Peter Wright either has to open himself, because look at the replay. As I said, the ball's coming. He's square onto the ball. If he does not turn his shoulder, he gets split up the middle. So he either gets split up the middle or he turns like he did, or as the AFL wants, he doesn't contest the ball. And as I said, I have seen nothing from the AFL to suggest that if in your example there with Jonathan Brown goes back, I've seen nothing to suggest that they would not be picking the bloke going the other way. There's been nothing from that, because the only things we've heard from them are Peter Wright should not have contested that ball. And that is wrong because Peter Wright has every right to go for that mark. And that's what he did until the very last second to avoid being split up the middle. He turned. That is what happened.
I, yeah, look, no, I, I disagree that your only options are you keep your arms out, you get split down the middle, or you do what Peter Wright did. There are
so what's the other option?
I've said it about four times now. I don't know whether you're just deliberately not listening to me,
but you're not making sense because you're saying he could have turned and taken the mark. And I'm telling you, there's no way you can take a mark side on. You can
take a chest mark straight on though. And if he's got his arms out for the chest mark and collects in with his, and he doesn't turn his hips, but he comes he through with his arms out.
Through the middle because it's still front on. He's still facing Cunningham, isn't he?
Yeah, but that's not the point because when you see the point of contact, I don't think Cunningham's getting him in the middle. He's still collecting Wright's shoulder.
But that doesn't make any sense whatsoever because he's front on taking a chest mark. How is Cunningham getting him in the shoulder?
He's getting him in the other shoulder, Bont. If you see the point of contact Wright makes is with his right shoulder that comes across.
Where his chest was.
Right. So if Wright comes straight at the football, he's going to get his left bicep and his left shoulder.
No. You just said yes when I said his chest. So if he's going to hit his chest, how is he miraculously going to hit his left arm if he doesn't turn?
Because he's hit his chest because his body is turned into him. If he comes straight, I feel like your ears are painted on tonight, Bonta. Like if you come straight at the football, I think he hits him in the left shoulder. And he cleaned Cunningham up all the same, but he's trying to take a legitimate chest mark. And I think he gets off. Or he puts his arms out and he leaps a bit higher and he probably collects him in the hip. Or, yeah, he diverts out of the contest and we all call him a soot for not hitting the contest hard enough, but he doesn't get 4 weeks. The one thing he could not do is leave the air, close your eyes and turn your shoulder.
The one thing he could not do, the AFL has said, is he could not contest that ball. And that's what they've said. They think he shouldn't have contested the ball. I'm not sure why you're arguing all these other... That's what the AFL has said. And as I said, I don't understand how you're telling me that... The point of it that he'd take a chest mark, and if he didn't turn, he'd get hit in the arms, protecting his chest, and at the same time, he'd somehow get that left shoulder. That doesn't make sense to me. The reason he's hitting him in the right shoulder is because he's turned his body side on. If you then turn your body back the other way, your point of contact is the middle of your body. It's not your left shoulder. He's turned 90 degrees. He hasn't turned 120 degrees. He's turned 90 degrees.
I've watched the incident more times than I can count since in all the discussion, and I'm convinced if he just came straight on to try mark it, even with a chest mark. Oh, we've been talking about this for 20 minutes, so we need to move on to something else. But I think at the very least, he could have tried to chest mark it. He could have done anything else other than what he did. And if you do that, at the end of that, the rules are really clear, Bonta. If you take your eyes off the football and you don't legitimately contest it and you make contact with the head, you are liable. And that's one thing Peter Wright couldn't do. It's one thing he did. He takes 4 weeks. I know
what the rule's saying, and I'm saying the rule's wrong, and I'm saying he did contest that ball right until the last second when Cunningham, with no regard for himself, put himself in Peter Wright's way. And I get why he got 4 weeks. I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And if the AFL is really serious about the fact that they don't want people to contest the football, this game is in a lot more trouble than we thought. I understand the Sam Powell Pepper. I understood the Mason Redmond. Punching someone off the ball is ridiculous. By the way, I also understand why was it Heaney didn't get it because the backhand little slap was not the same thing. So a lot of people saying that was the same thing as Redmond. It clearly wasn't. I get all that. I just don't get now why all of a sudden a player like Cunningham can run back and be allowed to essentially do whatever they want. And Peter Wright's the guy that has to do something to avoid the action because Cunningham, if he didn't run back with the fly of the ball stupidly, like Jonathan Brown used to, and Jonathan Brown, as you said earlier, there's a difference between brave and crazy brave, stupid brave, and Jonathan Brown was the latter. This doesn't happen. So that's my whole point here is we're saying, well, if Peter Wright had to do something different. I'm saying Cunningham also has to do something different. And at the moment, with these incidents and with dangerous tackles where the AFL is saying all the onus is on the tackler, we're going to end up with a lot more serious injuries because the AFL aren't currently cracking down on players putting themselves in dangerous positions. And that's the problem.
Yeah, like I said, I've been on this for a while. So the last thing I'm going to say to this is you said that he was contesting football up to the last second. My point is that's exactly the point. It can't be up until the last second. It has to be all the way through the contest. It doesn't matter if you, it doesn't matter if you're not contesting it for a split second or the whole time. As soon as you're not, you're liable. But I think
he has a right to protect himself, and that's what that last second was. He was protecting his own body. So
look, we're going to argue about this for an hour and we don't have an hour. So let's.
No, well, the other thing I want to talk about is, so he got graded as severe, which
makes sense.
Well, does it? Because I thought severe was the Brent Staker. You're thumped, you're out cold, and you get carried out cold off the ground.
This is the grading classifiable. I've got in front of me the grading classifiable offences for 2023 for AFL Queensland, which is the state branch of the AFL for Queensland, which I imagine that
you'd be surprised how different they are.
Well, I don't actually think they're all that different, considering they're talking about, you know, community standards and filtering these things down the community. So here's the difference between high and severe. High is major impact on the player, and high impact on the player was not able to participate in the remainder of the game, and or major ongoing concerns that require medical intervention may miss some matches. Here is severe: major impact and serious injury to the player, and or likely to miss one or a significant number of matches, did not compete in the rest of the game. So I would suggest that, considering Cunningham's out for a week, probably two, and didn't take part in the rest of the game, it's definitely severe already. Then there's the potential to cause serious injury, which means they can bump it up a level if they want to. So I think severe is about right.
I actually don't think there's much difference there at all between high and severe, really. The language seems pretty similar. And look, I know what you said, but I'm telling you right now, there is a huge difference between what the AFL and what their state leagues, country leagues, metro leagues, the inconsistencies between the AFL leagues at the moment is
the
crazy.
Grading tables are the grading table is the same. Like, the grading table for AFL Queensland is exactly the same as it is for the AFL in terms of, like, intentional, high, severe, medium,
low. So you've got the AFL grading table as well?
Yeah, I've looked at the AFL grading table and the AFL Queensland grading table, and they're exactly the same. So I would presume that at least the impact guidelines are relatively similar as well. But that's not the hint or there. I think it's close enough between high and severe that if they wanted the could cause serious injury to bump it up, it wouldn't take much.
I get the severe thing. I just think severe is, as I said, is for the Brent Staker style. So he obviously got taken off the stretcher, but he was sitting up as he got taken off the stretcher. He was clearly okay because they sat him on the bench. They didn't rush him to hospital. It's a bit bizarre to me, I think, that we go absolute severe. I would have said it was high, but yeah. And the other problem we've got is as I said, the gradings you're reading out there of high and severe, they sound pretty similar to me. It comes down to a matter of interpretation.
They do, yeah.
There's absolutely no clear cut method as to what the go is, and I think it's a little bit rough here. That, as you said earlier, he got the same as Sam Palpepper for starters, which is just ridiculous because they're completely separate incidents. And I originally thought we'd be looking at high, which I think is about 3 weeks, or 2 weeks maybe. So, I mean, the fact that you got four, I think, is just harsh.
Go ahead.
Yep. Yeah, I just think if we're going to have these different levels where they're severe or high or medium or low, they need to actually be really clear as to what they are. And give out some examples because, I mean, look, I've Googled the tribunal grades as well. I've only found the AFL Queensland one. I can't find the AFL one anywhere.
There's probably a reason for that. They don't want people to find it. But, like, I think the major difference is the amount of games. So high is they may miss some games. Severe is they're likely to miss a significant number. So I think the fact that Cunningham's already out for one, possibly two, probably tips him into the severe category. But on the same hand, I think he's out because of the mandatory concussion protocols.
Which was going to be my point. He's not out because he got – I mean,
He is out because he got KO'd, yeah, but not because medically he can't be ruled in. Yeah.
And you watch Chris, at some point this is going to bite them in the ass in the preliminary final where someone gets a concussion and is out for a week and misses a grand final. And then all of a sudden the pre-finals bye will become a pre-grand final bye because the AFL will react. But and look, to be honest, knowing how it works, it'll probably be Zach Merritt Jr. in 2053 when we finally make finals and win some thing. And yeah, look, I know. And look, I've probably been a little bit mean towards you, Chris, because I know that you're not arguing because you believe it. You're just arguing the AFL's position. I just don't agree with the AFL at all.
Oh no, I agree with that position that so, I put forward 100%.
But yeah, you get where I'm coming from. So
that's all right. Look, can we talk about the game maybe? Just to cheer us up.
We can talk about the game. So look, the reality is, I suppose we can talk about the game in a fact that unfortunately there are a lot of negatives coming out of the game. But I don't think that's what the club needs to focus on at the moment. And I'll admit, I'm probably a bit of a sad sack at the moment because I'm sort of just sick of the club not being any good, and I'm sick of the fact that we're mediocre and have been for the better part of 20 years. So my viewpoints at the moment are clearly clouded by that. But there were still some positives to take out of the game Saturday night, and obviously the main one is that we were up to it in our, you know, we were up to it to our eyeballs probably until, I don't know, 10 minutes to go. I mean, 10 minutes to go, we were within a couple of kicks. So, and Sydney are probably one of the premiership favourites. So that's got to be a real plus for Brad Scott and the players.
Yeah, I think there was 10 minutes at the end of the third quarter where they kicked three or four in a row and pushed out from about a goal difference to about four or five goals different. And then again, sort of 5 minutes to start and end the fourth quarter where it got away from us. Look, the positives are that, you know, we won stoppage clearances around the ground and we won clearances generally. We won contested possession, tied in contested possession, which generally against Sydney we get well and handsomely beaten in. It was really, for me, the tale of two styles. So we were pretty good in the clearances and when the game was in congestion, but as soon as the ball got out in space, Sydney was just running all over us. And I think part of that is the transition defense, which we'll probably talk about every week for the rest of the year at this rate, Charles. I won't mention it now. A lot of ball watching and reactive defending through the middle of the field, which when the field is as short as it is at Sydney, if you're half a second late and reacting defensively, it doesn't take much for the ball to go, you know, end to end, which is what they were doing. But I thought Zach Merritt was probably the standout, as he always is. 32 disposals, a couple of great goals, some great tackles, rundown tackles. He really tried to lift us when the ball game was getting away from us there for a little bit. And I thought he and Will Setterfield through the middle of the ground were just tireless, trying to will us towards some competitiveness towards the end of that third quarter and throughout the rest of the game. I thought those two through the midfield were outstanding, to be honest. I think Setterfield had six or seven tackles, so did Merritt. Setterfield had eight clearances, which is just mind-boggling. I thought they were pretty good between the two of them. And I thought Jade Gresham as well kicked 23 disposals. He was a shining light as well.
And Jakey Stringer with his three goals and his contract year to just keep that ticking on nicely. So we are on contract watch for Jakey, and he again delivered. The other bloke that, again, I thought did all right on the weekend, obviously, was Sammy Durham. And so the news today was 4 years. Look, I think I said the preseason I thought Durham was going to be our most improved player. I think you'd agree I'm pretty bullish on how he's going. I think he was pretty good again on Saturday night. I am probably concerned with 4 years purely. And look, the thing is, I look at the Will Snelling, and I've said it on the board, and I'll say it here. Snelling in, what was it, 2021 was third in the best and fairest, and then 2 years later was delisted. So I get that Sammy's not the same style of player and he's a little bit younger, but when you're bringing these blokes in who didn't get drafted, who had to work their way up, you know, there's reasons they didn't get drafted. And look, Nick Martin's clearly been the exception to that rule because he's just exploded and been unbelievable. Sammy Durham hasn't done that. So I look at that and go, 4 years, look, yeah, we give it to him, nothing much we can do about it. Probably would have been more comfortable with two.
Yeah. 4 year extensions, 4 years plus you're getting into sort of top five or six players in your team level, I think personally, but I think so much of it is how the contract is structured. Like if it's heavily front loaded and he's not on a lot later on in his deal, I don't think it's too bad. I support Essendon, the club, but I'm never upset when players can secure themselves with a good contract. Good for them. Their playing careers aren't long. If they can extend as long as they can, good for them. But probably just one thing I just want to touch on before we move on to the preview of the St Kilda game is this Essendon edge thing that was sort of premeditated or predetermined before the game. A lot of pushing and shoving, stuff off the ball. Sydney had a bit to say about it afterwards, but, you know, winners are grinners and we can please ourselves as the losers. What did you think? It made me a little uncomfortable in the sense that, not that they were trying to be tough. I'm not uncomfortable with tough football, but it was so clearly not their nature.
Yeah, I didn't hate it, to be honest. I agree with you. Look, so actually I had this conversation with Mercurial 89 away from the board, and he made what I thought was a very fair point, that Tom Papley was right. You know, Essendon clearly were faking it, I suppose, for want of a better term. It's, as you said, it's not their natural game, so they were clearly putting it on. My counterpoint to Merck was that, Papley was right, but he's also still a giant flog, because you just have to look at what he did to Dacos last year in the finals series, where they all got around him in his face. And, you know, so it's all well and good for Papley and co to say, oh, you know, you shouldn't do this faux tough guy, when, you know, there's plenty of examples of them doing it. And I think Tom Papley, even before the All-Star game, where he played in that All-Star game, said that he was a bit concerned how the other players are going to react to him, because he's generally a bit of a prick on the field, so he thought they might not take to him too kindly. So, you know, you've got someone who's admitting that they openly do this, also bitching because his club's been on the receiving end. It was a little bit ridiculous. I didn't love it like I think a lot of Essendon fans have. I think a lot of Essendon fans love it because they think we've been soft for a long time. I don't disagree with that assessment. We probably have been, but I also think that the days of roughing up your opponents, as clearly seen by poor old Peter Wright, if I can just reference that again, show you can't do it anymore. So I think, and let's be honest, Sammy Draper's lucky that...
Oh, he's so up. Lucky.
How lucky is he that he got up? Because if he lay down for an extra 10 seconds and then got helped off the field, even if he'd come back on, I still reckon Sammy Draper's looking at medium impact... body.
I thought the effort from Draper was way more garish than Peter Wright's. Like, Draper had no intent for the footy. He was just wanting to inflict as much pain as he could. And he is incredibly lucky. He got him not high. He got him in the back. And he got back up. If he'd got him high, he's in all sorts, Sammy Draper. I thought that was far more garish than Peter Wright.
And Nick Hines' action beats both of them,
That's pretty. That was cheap as well. But that's the problem when you try and put on toughness. Like, you've got to recruit players with an edge, or you've got to develop it. You can't put it on for a week or 2 weeks, because then you get guys who don't know how to be tough at the ball and around the ground, trying to be tough elsewhere. And that's how you get, you know, Nick Hind and Sammy Drake, not necessarily right, because I think we both agree that was more just an accident of the marking contest. But it'll be interesting to see how long they carry this edge for.
Yeah, well, hopefully they carry it in St Kilda. So we do have St Kilda this week. Saturday, it's the Twilight Saturday game at Etihad, Marvel, Docklands, whatever you want to freaking Telstra Dome. I think it was there for at one point. Pick your poison, pick your stadium name. So
Ansett, wasn't it, at one point? Yeah, there we go.
Ansett? No,
Ansett Stadium.
No, I think because Docklands, Ansett went down 2001. I'm pretty sure. I reckon you're thinking of the old Ansett Cup, maybe. I'm not sure, but
it doesn't matter.
We're playing St Kilda at the Inside Stadium in Melbourne. Then they will also be without Max King, who did not get off, which, you know, made me laugh a little bit, because there's a lot of watch Max King get off now. The AFL screwed Essendon. Comments and then promptly Kingy didn't get off, so that'll be helpful, because they're also missing Mason Wood is another player that's down. The Crouch brother that plays for them, I believe, that the Bradley variety, is also missing Whether or not you care about him, I don't. It sort of depends that
Did
he's back.
I see that Liam Henry
And Liam
is
Henry is
also
also
out?
missing, so
Yeah.
unfortunately we won't get to see Dyson Heppel tail him off. There is rumours that he saw Heppel was playing and thought that he, Heppel just had that little bit too much agility for him, so he decided to sit this week out.
Oh boy. Yep.
I just thought I'd throw that out there to see if one of Heppel's staunchest defenders was going to bite, but I think you and I are both on the same page with poor old Heps at the moment. It's going to be a good game, I think, for us because Ross Lyon does like to slow things down and lock things down, which probably works well for our defense because it means that we're probably going to have time to put numbers behind the ball. But
Yeah, it's
whether,
interesting.
yeah,
So go ahead.
no, it's just, but whether or not that's enough for us to get the win, who really knows?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because they're probably one of the two or three best running teams in the competition at the moment, St Kilda. They'll block it up around the football, but as soon as they win it, their transition is really good at the moment, particularly defensively. So if we're lazy in defense like we have been for the last couple of weeks, this will get ugly quick, particularly on the fast deck at, Ansett Stadium, as I'm calling it now.
Yeah, well, yeah. And another thing is in the preseason, they did beat us up with the big body. So it'd be interesting to see if that happens again.
So I'm tipping St Kilda by 3 goals. I've got my margins right for both the games so far. What do you reckon?
I'd say it's going to be Essendon by, let's go with 3 goals just because I can and I can be delusional. But if you ever want to hear a man rant hysterically, you've probably got that tonight on this podcast. I do apologize for getting a little bit passionate at times, Grizz, but thank you for joining me.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. And as always, guys, like, subscribe, and tell your friends.